Mary Casanova is the author of 30 books, ranging from the picture book One Dog Canoe to the historical fiction novel The Clipfish Code. She's won many awards, including 2 Minnesota Book Awards, and she has written a new book. It's put out by the University of Minnesota Press. It's the story of 16-year-old Sadie Rose in the Roaring Twenties by Rainy Lake on the border where Minnesota meets Canada. We've got Mary Casanova joining us on KAXE again. Mary, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Heidi. I'm honored to be back again.
Well, this book is set where you live. That must have been pretty cool to do history of the place you're actually in now.
It's really satisfying. I mean, I've lived up in this area for over 30 years, and I feel like I've sort of absorbed some of this history in my pores, and this story is this birthing of a lot of what I've just experienced in this region over the years.
How does it make you feel about where you live now? Because it's a difficult story. It's pretty seedy in the 20s and Rainy Lake and all the things that were happening there.
Well, it was a tough area. I often will hear even my little community of Rainier, which is about 200 people, how many brothels lined the street back at the turn of the century, early 1900s, how rough a town it was, how many murders there might be at any given time. So it was a really rough and tumble area. And I don't try to soften that too much in this story, which is why it's definitely for young adults, 13 and up, or it's truly a crossover. I hope I have a lot of adults who will discover this book.
I couldn't put it down. It was one of those books that I know that it's marketed towards young adults when I began it, but I did not think once as I read it that I'm reading a book for young adults.
That's the best compliment I can get. I love that people can't put a book down, but also this is one that when I wrote it, honestly, I think I kept putting it off for years because it didn't fit neatly into my career as a children's author. And I really didn't know if it was going to be a book strictly for adults or if it could find its way into the young adult market. As it turned out, the University of Minnesota Press sort of debated within themselves that my editor wanted it to be a book for adults. Marketing said, let's make it young adults. So the debate goes on.
Well, I don't know if I even said the name of it. It's called Frozen, and I wonder if you can tell us what that name means to this story.
The name definitely figures in symbolically in the story. This whole story came from a tiny seed of history that I stumbled upon over 20 years ago. There's a great historical book called Kuchiching, just about Kuchiching history, written by historian Hiram Draki. In that book, I stumbled upon a few sentences about how in a small town in Kuchiching County, turn of the century, a working girl, a prostitute, was found frozen in the snow one morning. As a joke, somebody took her corpse, stood it up at the beginning of a council meeting, and as a joke for the others to laugh at. And when I read that, I knew that I had to do something with it. This woman's life, whoever she was, her life and even her death just wouldn't let me go. I couldn't get that haunting image out of my mind. And somehow this whole story that evolved over time was a way to give her voice and avenge her life.
It's strange for me to hear that that actually happened because it was so chilling in the story when that element comes, you know, because we know that Sadie Rose is our main character here, and we know that her mom was a prostitute and that she was murdered in some way. And that little tidbit comes out later in the book, and it's just, it's kind of shocking.
Yeah. Well, you can see where there's that visceral reaction to just my sharing that bit of story and why it stayed with me for so long as
no
well.
No kidding. Yeah.
Because one image, one moment like that, in my mind, it just speaks volumes to how women were treated. It begs the question of what kind of opportunities did women have? You know, who would have? Why? What kind of woman would have been stuck in that job at that time in history? So it led to lots of research about this area, but also trying to understand women's opportunities at that time in our country, and that there were very limited possibilities for what a woman could do for work or for independence. We didn't have a social system that gave people many safety nets if life fell apart around them.
That was what I was so struck by, was how northern Minnesota, right on the Canadian border, was such a microcosm for what was happening in the 20s, everywhere. I think, you know, even now we think of, if you live in northern Minnesota, you think of our life being maybe simpler, or that it isn't always a part of a broader history, because it's us. And so I was so struck by that, by the history of women and what's happening there in terms of industrialism and power and all of that. And I wonder if you can kind of explain a little bit of what this town is like that you're writing about in the 20s.
In some ways, I'm doing a composite picture of what was happening in Coochin County and, of course, nationally, by focusing on some of those bigger issues of prohibition, budding environmentalism against industrialism. But it all comes down to one character and trying to bring that to life through one character. So as I told Sadie Rose's story, what if her mother was a prostitute who was found frozen in the snow? What if Sadie Rose was 5 years old and followed her mother out into the snowstorm, is found in the snow and doesn't remember anything about the events? And when she's found, from that point on, she doesn't have a voice, literally and figuratively. She can't speak for 11 years. So the story starts when she's 16. So I have this character, and then, you know, what's going on? What's her world around her? As I started to write the story, then I realized, oh, there's all this other history on Rainy Lake about this budding environmentalist, Ernest Oberholzer, who stood up to a tycoon of an industrialist, E.W. Backus. It was a David and Goliath kind of story in itself, could be an epic novel. Those characters started to push their way into my story, so I kept on having to push them back a little bit, like, wait a second, this is Sadie Rose's story. But those were the kind of big, powerful forces that were happening, that were pushing against each other socially. And I couldn't not ignore women's lack of the vote. The story is set in 1920. It's the same summer that the right to vote passes. And so there's just all kinds of confluences of change that find their way into my story as I'm telling it.
We're talking with Mary Casanova about her new book that's out. It's called Frozen. It is set in the 20s on the Minnesota-Canadian border near the town where she lives, Rainier, Minnesota. Mary, let's talk more about Sadie Rose and that she can't speak when we first meet her, because it seems like, I felt like I sort of learned something about how we communicate with each other.
Oh.
By how how important words can be and how we almost waste them sometimes.
I love that comment. I think it's true. If all of a sudden you really try to imagine what it would be like not to be able to articulate what's going on inside you, to not be able to speak, how limiting that can be. That's exactly where I had to put myself as an author, and inside her shoes, and she's not able to speak, has to communicate on a slate board with chalk, that words really are powerful. And I think I keep returning to that theme because I think I discovered as a writer how powerful words were somewhere along my path. I guess it was about 16, 17 when I was in high school, and realized the power of the written word, and also had a hard time speaking out and really voicing my opinion verbally, and so writing for me became that way of having a voice. So I'm always interested in giving an underdog a voice, whether it's through written word or spoken word. Maybe that comes from growing up in my big family of 10 kids and 7 brothers and feeling a little outnumbered and always struggling to have a voice.
I think it really hit me, and I could see that young adult readers would really be taken by the idea of that for the very reason of if you can't always voice what you're thinking, and realizing that sometimes it isn't, even if you don't speak as much as everybody else, what you do say is all the more important because you're not always speaking.
That's true. Those powerful silences, and how in silence often is when we start determining who we are, and I guess at some deep level, listening to what our inner voice is, and maybe that's the most important place to gain a voice in the first place. And I think Sadie Rose certainly has her quiet times when she is sort of struggling and out leaving her family that has taken her in and exploring Rainy Lake on her own. She really does have to face herself and start to determine what's inside her.
She goes off on her own for the first time in her life and meets some people for the first time. The relationship she has with the young artist, woman that comes from a family that has money, and what a luxury she has that she can actually do art and has an art space. It really struck me as how lucky we are in this day and age that that isn't that bizarre for a woman to have a space to be able to do some sort of art or something on her own.
Yeah, a couple things I'd like to say about that. One, I do appreciate that you picked up on the differences in class, that that time in history we had an aristocracy on Rainy Lake and we had a working class, and there wasn't much in between. People would take the train, passenger trains up here from Chicago and from the Twin Cities, and then take the steamers out to their islands that often had quite nice lodge-type places. There is a character that I based Trinity on, a character named Virginia, and her family did have one of these very nice island resorts. And there still is, plying the waters of Rainy Lake, a wooden yacht called the Virginia, which was named after a girl named Virginia, same island that this boat belongs to, was the island that Virginia grew up on. And she was an artist. She studied in Paris. There is one cabin set aside that was her artist cabin. And so I very much lean on some real history for many of the characters that find their way into the story. And she's one of them.
It's also interesting to me how art plays a part in this story through Trinity, but also Sadie Rose's father had been a photographer, you know, and it's not a huge part of it, but you can see how art or some sort of expression of self has always been there. And I think sometimes in historical works, historical fiction, we don't always see that. It's more the bare bones of what's happening.
Oh, I love that, because I don't think I even really thought about that until you mentioned it. And I think in each case, the photographer, an artist, they are people who are a bit on the fringe of society in terms of the norm at that time. And so it does make sense, now that I think of it, that they also would be people who would express themselves through a different medium, perhaps, and maybe explain their art at the same time. Sometimes I learn things after people read a book, asking, what in the world did I write, and maybe why is it in there?
Let's talk more about Sadie Rose. She's been taken in by this family, and that storyline about sort of politics and power is really interesting, too. What can you tell us about it?
She is taken in by a mayor of the community in which her mother is found one morning. The mayor takes her in, but it isn't completely altruistic motivation. He says it's out of Christian duty, and as it turns out, it might be that he is helping cover some tracks by having Sadie Rose under his roof. It might be hiding a little bit about her mother's death. And so Sadie Rose, therefore, grows up in a home where, yes, she's taken care of, but she's not feeling the love. And I think that complicates her position in this family. It makes it a home where she certainly wants to have a voice, but also needs to find a sense of true family, and that is part of her quest. The home that my character grows up in is very much fashioned after the 100-plus-year-old house that I live in. In fact, as I sit here doing this interview, I'm sitting up in my studio, which looks out across the Rainy River meets Rainy Lake and is joined by a historic lift bridge, and that fits into the story as well. The person who built our house, I believe, is the one who engineered this lift bridge and then built this summer cottage home, two-level home across from his creative work and his investment, and that all kind of fits into my story as well.
Wow, I didn't realize how almost personal a story it was to your life in a sort of strange way, not exactly.
It truly is. It sort of mirrors the area, but also it give voice to a lot of the things that I've just been sort of fascinated with in my day-to-day life. So this is probably my most personal novel, I think, out of all of them that I've done, for reasons that I think I'm still beginning to understand.
It doesn't have a neat and tidy storyline. I mean, it's difficult. There isn't like easy answers to things. You also write, you know, picture books for kids where there usually is more of a nice, tidy ending to something. Is that refreshing as a writer? Is that difficult for you?
I really like the variety. I love to be able to do something light, and a picture book is fun and delightful and just a great time playing with words, and I'm able to bring it to a fully satisfying resolution and happy ending. But, of course, with novels, the older the reader I write for, the more we're often reflecting life, and life rarely is tied up with nice big red bows. What's more interesting to me is the journey, the process that my characters go through in figuring out who they are and defining their identity through circumstances around them. Yeah, neat endings aren't so important to me.
It's just recently come out. Do you hope that people who live where you do read it so they know a little more of what life was like there in the 20s?
Absolutely. I happen to love history myself, and I think there's a lot of history in this region that the people aren't really aware of, even locally here. When I talk about the industrialists and the environmentalists that play a big part of this region's history, a lot of local people really don't know that history, and I'm hoping that this will help share some of that. But what's fun is on a national level, this book is getting a lot of attention, and I think that the universal scenes and the messages that are in this 1920s story seem to resonate with a much bigger audience as well. So my hope is it'll find local readers, but even a broader audience at the same time.
Even though it's set in the 20s, it has the themes. I mean, that's what happens if historical fiction works well. You realize these are no different than the things we face today.
Exactly. It's really, really true. You know, right now I'm writing something that's set during the Civil War, so my brain is over in that part of history. And what I love about doing anything historical is that it always sort of puts things in perspective today. I was listening to the presidential debates and all of that. What we seem to have is great schisms in our society. But, you know, the more I look back to another era, it's like, well, things were worse then. We were more divided then. This isn't so bad now, and I think it just helps. It helps me to put things in perspective, and that's kind of strangely comforting.
Well, and even the struggle between industrialism and environmentalism, I think we think of that as modern,
right?
And it's certainly not.
No, it's not. It's not. I think what's interesting is that if you go back in time and not that far back, so 1920. Here, this environmentalist, Oberholzer, or they call him Ober often, he was talking about how wilderness could be a beneficial thing for people, that it could help them on some soulful, spiritual level, as well as their physical health. And this was a radical idea. Now, you know, everybody would say, well, of course we need wilderness and nature. But back then, it really was thinking outside of the box. I have to put a plug in for him, too, as an individual. If he hadn't stood up to E.W. Backus, this paper mill industrialist at the time, one of the wealthier men in America, we would have potentially between the BWCA, the Quetico, and this Rainy Lake watershed area, it would be all one big bathtub. Because this industrialist plan was to build 16 dams, and not just the one at International Falls and Kettle Falls Hotel, but 16 dams across the region, which would have just made it into one big reservoir without islands, inlets, bays, and that's a pretty striking visual in my mind. And to think that one person stood up against somebody so powerful and really stopped that plan, really stopped it in its tracks with much effort. To me, that's amazing and inspiring.
That's Mary Casanova. The new novel is called Frozen. It's put out by the University of Minnesota Press. You can find lots more information on all her work at her website, marycasanova.com. Mary, thanks so much. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you, Heidi.